Welcome to Change Surfer Radio. I'm Dr. J. For the next half hour, keep your mind open and your radio tuned to the left as we present a sexy high-tech vision of a radically democratic future. Stay tuned for an interview with artificial intelligence guru Ben Goertzel about the promises of AI and the need for compassion in today's world. I am speaking with Ben Goertzel. Ben is the primary intellectual force behind the Novamente AI system. Currently, he's the CEO and chief scientist of BioMind, a firm established to apply Novamente AI software to bioinformatics. Previously, he was the founder and chairman of WebMind. He has a PhD in math from Temple, which he got in 1989, and he's held several university faculty positions in math, computer science, and psychology in the U.S., New Zealand, and Australia. He's the author of numerous research papers and journalistic articles, a biography of Linus Pauling, and five scholarly books dealing with topics in the cognitive sciences, including chaotic logic and creating internet intelligence. Now, he's also the leader of the Artificial General Intelligence Research Institute, whose objective is to create greater than human artificial intelligence, and he is on the board of directors of the Singularity Action Group. Can you give us some idea of the kind of applications of artificial intelligence that you're applying to bioinformatics with BioMind?
Yeah, our primary focus for the moment is on the analysis of gene expression data, which is a certain kind of quantitative data that's produced by new devices called microarrays. And what microarrays allow you to do is to look at not just which genes are in the genome of a given person or organism, but which genes are being produced at what rate, at what point in time. It lets you get a picture of the dynamics of a cell in action. And this data that's being generated is very complex and very difficult for human biologists to understand. And there's a need for artificial intelligence technology to interpret the data from these type of experiments and try to understand what it means about how cells function, both healthy cells and cells suffering from problems like cancer, chronic fatigue syndrome, Parkinson's disease, and so forth.
Now, I want to get to pretty soon here to the organizations that you've started and that you're involved with. The Artificial General Intelligence Research Institute is the principal organization that you're helping to lead. Tell us what the agenda of Augury is and why you started it.
Right. So the story goes back a little bit further. I've been working with the same team of programmers and scientists on advanced artificial intelligence software since 1998, and our primary long-term goal is what we call artificial general intelligence, meaning the creation of software programs that have intelligence that's equal to and eventually exceeding that of humans, and that's very broad in scope, which is different from what we call narrow AI, which is what dominates most of the AI field. Standard AI projects today will focus on very specialized functionalities like playing chess, analyzing genetic data, driving a car, solving equations. What we're after with our autonomous, self-motivated, self-understanding, self-improving AI system, and something that can perform intelligently even in domains that us, the programmers, never have thought of or heard of before, and can understand itself to some extent and improve itself. And that's a big long-term goal, and in order to support the project on the path toward that long-term goal, we're applying interim, incomplete versions of the software to various practical problems, such as the bioinformatics problem we just mentioned. So in terms of organizations, I had a company called WebMind Incorporated, which we founded in 1998, and we closed the doors of that company in March 2001 due to financial issues connected with the overall dot-com crash. After that happened, myself and the core AI team of WebMind stayed together and decided to begin a new project based on the same conceptual foundation, the same basic ideas of how to create a genuine artificial general intelligence system. And we created a company called Novamente, LLC. Novamente, meaning new mind in Portuguese. The bulk of my collaborators on this project are actually in Belo Horizonte, Brazil. So a Portuguese name seemed appropriate. So Novamente is a company that basically exists to own the Novamente AI engine, which is our software program that we're implementing and testing now, which we hope will eventually grow into a truly generally intelligent software system. We then created BioMind specifically to pursue bioinformatics applications of our Novamente AI system. And the AGIRI, Artificial General Intelligence Research Institute, is intended to focus on non-commercial humanitarian and post-humanitarian applications of the Novamente system. So it's a combination of profit-making and purely scientific/humanitarian applications. And AGIRI is the non-commercial arm.
Now, you and your collaborators involved with AGIRI and your other firms, you generally accept the idea of a singularity, and we want to get to what you think the singularity means, because there's a number of different interpretations floating around.
But I wouldn't necessarily say that all of my collaborators accept the idea of the singularity, but I certainly do.
Uh-huh.
There's a saying that Isabella Freire, who is one of my Brazilian collaborators, taught me, which is spreading the mayonnaise, a Brazilian expression, and which refers to tossing around speculative ideas whose time may or may not have come. And I think some of my collaborators view the singularity as a bit of mayonnaise spreading, whereas some of them have more of the point of view that I do, which is a singularity, a technological, scientific, social, and psychological singularity is fairly close to inevitable, and it's going to change everything you can imagine and many things you cannot imagine. And software like what we're trying to build, perhaps our software, if we're successful, can play an extremely major role in this. But I wouldn't say that we're a kind of monolithic team on this issue. Certainly working on our artificial general intelligence software is quite meaningful, whether or not one accepts the singularity vision.
Do you follow, you personally now, do you have a dystopian or utopian, or it's all up for grabs kind of view of the singularity?
I think that could go one way or another, and whether something is dystopian or utopian also depends on your particular perspective. I mean, the thing that worries me most is that we won't get to the singularity because we'll blow ourselves up first with nuclear biological weapons and so forth. If we do get to the singularity, one way it could go is that through artificial intelligence, nanotechnology, or other technologies that don't have a name yet, the human race could potentially be wiped out. And, of course, to the beings that followed us, this might not be a bad thing. It might be a utopia for them and not for us. On the other hand, there's a strong possibility that following a singularity, artificial intelligence programs will happily coexist with enhanced humans who've uploaded themselves into computers and other sorts of minds that we don't even know about yet. So I think it could go either way, and that the probabilities of a positive or negative outcome are very difficult to assess now, and even the definition of what is a positive or negative outcome is not that easy when you get really deeply into it. So yeah, I'm not one who believes we can predict or plot out a post-singularity world with very much precision. And I know I differ a little bit from some other singularity-interested people in that regard.
Well, we're going to get to that in a second, but let's also talk about the Singularity Action Group that you're on the board of directors
right.
of. Would it be fair to say that the agenda for SAG, which is at singularityaction.com, is to tip this coming singularity in a positive direction?
I would say so. The Singularity Action Group is really a kind of loose confederation of individuals who believe that technical and scientific singularity is possible and desirable, and may be able to achieve in the near future. I think the that group is only a few months old. It's really still just getting organized. There's plans to orchestrate work in AI, nanotechnology, and other areas. And I think they have a mixture of some computer science and other scientific professionals, and then what I'd term highly educated, enthusiastic amateurs. And I'm not terribly involved in the details of what those guys are doing, but I'm as a board member, I'm providing them with kind of general advice on AI and other matters. But this Singularity Action Group's concrete projects are quite distinct from my own AI project, anyhow.
This is Dr. J. We're listening to Change Surfer Radio, and today we're talking with Dr. Ben Goertzel. He's the primary intellectual force behind the Novamente AI system and the CEO of BioMind, the director of the Artificial and General Intelligence Research Institute, and he's on the board of directors of Singularity Action Group. And you can find his website at Goertzel, GOERTZEL.org. And Aguirre is at AGIRI.org. Now, on the Aguirre website, Ben, you have text of the book that you've written, which is wonderful text, by the way, The Path to Post-Humanity. And you have chapters there on artificial intelligence, cyborgization, cryonics, nanotechnology, genetics, and all of it from what I would call a transhumanist perspective. But as you said, you don't take the usual tack on some of these topics. And in a latter chapter, you have a chapter called Extropian Elitism and Humanist Posthumanism. And if you have a second, I just want to quote a section of that. You say, the creed of the Extropians, a group of transhumanist futurists in California, is how to technologize with a hammer. This group of computer geeks and general high-tech freaks wants to push ahead with every kind of technology as fast as possible, the internet, body modification, etc. Along the way, they want to get rid of governments, moral strictures, and eventually humanity itself, remaking the world as a hyper-economic virtual reality. Their utopian vision is sketchy but fabulous, a kind of neuromancerish, social Darwinist, Silicon Valley to the nth degree, to the collective soul. I sympathize with their techno-futurism and their lust for freedom, but their brand of ethics scares me a little. Now, you may or may not know that the raison d'etre for this radio show is actually that as a transhumanist, someone who's excited by all these ideas, I've often been dismayed at the elitism and Nietzschean disregard and misanthropy of people who had similar ideas. And conversely, the left, much of the my political fellow thinkers are anti-technology. And so it seemed like you really struck that note here with me. You've tempered this, your critique of the Extropians, a little bit, and subsequently in that chapter and other things that you have to say. But do you think that this is true? Is this a distinctly American phenomenon? You're involved now with hackers and AI programmers in Brazil and around the world. Do you think that around the world this is true, that technology enthusiasts and people who are looking forward to these kinds of radical transformations of society through technology have this kind of elitism and Nietzschean ethics?
Well, I've met a large number of non-American transhumanists who do take that sort of attitude. So it certainly is not purely an American attitude. I would say my Brazilian colleagues tend not to have that attitude, but I certainly have known plenty of non-Americans who could be elitist with the best of them. So I think it partly comes along with the territory in that the concepts we're talking about are concepts that not many people in society today understand or appreciate, and it can give you a bit of a charge, a bit of a feeling of superiority to feel that you understand the future. And most people don't understand the future, but instead are thinking what seem like really silly things about it, being afraid of human cloning, you know, wanting to pass laws against people augmenting their own intelligence. And when you face this sort of opposition and what I view as a backwards attitude, I think that easily kind of turns into a feeling of superiority. Like, there's a few of us who know what's up, and we're going to improve ourselves, and these other people don't even want us to. So, the hell with them. And I think attitude is an easy one to fall into, but ultimately is a destructive one. I'm always pleased to find people such as yourself who see the power of science and technology to completely transform reality as we know it, but do not feel the need to use it as an excuse for kind of elevating themselves above everyone else. You know?
Well, do you have any of pet projects, any pet social policies that you see as kind of a way that artificial intelligence could be humanized or made to contribute to the general world? Like, for instance, for me, national health insurance or some kind of guaranteed access to the benefits of the medical technology that I see coming down the pike is essential, that if it would be untenable to have a society where the rich get to live to be 200 and everybody else gets 80 years of life. Do you see a similar kind of set of policies of to maximize the general welfare through artificial intelligence?
Well, I tend not. Although I'm somewhat of a left-wing guy, I tend not to think in terms of government's policies so much, but more in terms of the technologies that AI can enable for the good of all. But you're right that in order for those technologies to really be used for the good of all, a lot of policy issues do come up. I mean, I'm very satisfied in a moral sense with the kind of bioinformatics work that we're doing, because we're using our AI technology in the state it's in now to help scientists search for cures for things like Parkinson's disease and chronic fatigue syndrome. And, you know, this clearly it's a good thing in the short term. It also seems to be a positive thing to kind of grow your AI system from a simple to a complex system in the context of doing positive humanitarian work. But the policy issue comes in after that. Let's say that our work comes up with a cure for Parkinson's disease, or I should say helps to come up with a cure for it, because AI is only a small part of that, or cancer or anti-aging. Once we come up, hypothetically, together with medical people, with technology that can solve the aging problem, supposing we do that, yeah, what's to stop that only from being disseminated in the U.S., for example, because people in third world countries can't afford it?
Would you take a contract with the Total Information Awareness Project, you know, some kind of way of using AI as part of the national security apparatus?
I would have to evaluate the details of such a proposition carefully.
Don't mean to put you on the spot, but yeah. It seems like that's one place where the government's really pushing the information technology as ways of keeping track of everybody and figuring out, profiling people, who's going to be a terrorist and who's not.
Yeah, I'd say to answer a question like that, I'd have to know more details. There's pluses and minuses to that kind of surveillance, and obviously it could be abused. It could also be used for good, but it's clearly doesn't have the unmitigatedly positive moral impact of helping to cure diseases, right?
In the aforementioned chapter about the Extropians, you also talk about Ellie Yudkowsky. Ellie is on the board of the World Transhumanist Association,
yeah.
I'm secretary of, and he has his own set of projects that seem kind of related to this idea of the socializing of AI, and you talk about those and how they're similar and different from your own ideas. Basically, Ellie's trying to argue that if there's going to be this super powerful AI eventually, we should try to put someplace deep in its code a pro-social, pro-human, compassionate ethos, and that somehow that could be encoded in. You're not too enthusiastic about the plausibility of that.
Well, Eliezer and I are reasonably good friends, I mean, in the real world, off of email. So I think as with some of the Extropians, what we have is kind of a friendly rivalry. The main difference I have with Eliezer is that he believes one can plan out in advance what he calls a philosophy of friendly AI. You can figure out in advance how to create an AI system that will retain a positive, human-friendly moral structure, even as it continually revises, improves, and rewrites itself. I tend to think that a real theory of AI friendliness, AI morality, is only going to come about through some serious years of experimentation with AIs that are smarter than what we have now, but yet not smart enough to launch a singularity. So he's focusing a lot of attention on kind of upfront theory of AI friendliness, whereas the attention of myself and my team is focused on actually trying to create an AI with true general intelligence. But I do think the issues he's talking about are very, very important ones. And once you have a kind of near human level AI system, assuming all our hopes and dreams carry through and we can get there, we're going to have to do a lot of experimentation. There's a whole science of AI psychology and AI morality that doesn't even exist yet, and it certainly will be in our interest to master that science before creating and releasing AIs that really do have the power to transform the world on their own.
Well, it seems like Ellie's idea has a certain view of human nature. As you say, that there's this field of AI psychology, which is coming out of human psychology, and certain people think that there is a kernel of goodness or sociability, pro-social orientation inside, perhaps genetically, sociobiologically based inside the human mind, and others see human beings as selfish, rational creatures whose reason came out of the attempt to fulfill our desires, and that all ethics and morality is simply our response to either internalized or to the external stimuli of punishments and rewards. And so, on those grounds, if that was true about human cognition and as well artificial intelligence, it would suggest a very different way of controlling or preventing the kinds of deleterious consequences of out-of-control AI.
Yeah, I mean, the bottom line is, from a scientific perspective, we don't really know what motivates humans to do what they do. We have some knowledge, but it's very incomplete. And from my own point of view, is that both of the two opposing perspectives you just outlined have some fundamental truth to them. I do believe on a personal level that there's a kind of universal force of compassion underlying the human heart and mind. But yet, clearly, we have an awful lot of selfishness to us, and a lot of so-called altruistic behavior really is selfishness in disguise, as Nietzsche and other philosophers described. I think those views both have a lot of truth to them. And they're both part of the ultimate picture of human psychology, which science has not yet built. And in terms of AI psychology, one of the points Eliezer has made, which is a very good one, is that the psychology of AI systems need bear no great resemblance to the psychology of humans. And that has its dangers and its benefits. It means that just because humans have a basic force of compassion, an AI system need not have it, although it might. It also means that a lot of the more dangerous aspects of the human psyche, in terms of violence, status-seeking behavior, vengefulness, all these things need not exist in an AI either. So the psychology of AIs is an extremely deep and interesting topic, but trying to delve into it too deeply without any really serious general intelligence-possessing software systems to play with, It's obviously very hard. It's hard enough to understand the psychology of an intelligent mind when it's right in front of you.
Do you think, as some computer scientists, I'm no expert, but it seems like some computer scientists have increasingly focused on the evolved and self-willed aspects of intelligence, do you think that one of the problems, and I think Jaron Lanier has also pointed out this, that a lot of early artificial intelligence was said, if we could just get a machine that was as smart as a human being, could do as many calculations as a human being, then it would be like a human being. And the thing that they were missing was that there was this self-will aspect to human intelligence, that we had goals that were internally set goals. And that is also the big moral danger and kind of the existential danger that we would face from these if they had their own goals and they were different from our own. Could we get all the benefits that we want from artificial intelligence without ever allowing them to have selfish evolving goals?
Well, I don't know the answer to that question, and I think a firm answer to a question like that will only come with experimentation on AI systems that are much better than anything we have now, such as a completed Novamente system. But having given that caveat, I would say my intuition, my educated guess, is that you cannot. My guess is that to have general intelligence beyond a certain level, it's going to require an element of independence and autonomous volition on the part of the AI system. But really, that is an educated guess. My guess is worth more than that of the average person. But that's a long way from a really solid statement, since we have an awful lot to learn in this area.
Ben, I just want to close by reading another quote from your book, The Path to Posthumanity, which is at the Aguirre website, agiri.org. And in discussing Eli Yudkowsky's vision of creating what literally would be a deus ex machina, a savior AI, which could solve all of our problems, you say, the difference is between the following two attitudes. One, seeking to, as a lone and noble crusader, save the world in spite of itself. And two, seeking to cooperatively engage the world in the process of saving itself. Which, I have to say, is the most profoundly democratic thing I've ever heard an AI person ever say. As we were talking about earlier,
right.
AI people are much more prone towards the former idea if they're interested in saving anybody at all.
Right.
I really want to recommend that people go and look at your work. At GOERTZEL.org is the Ben Goertzel site, and then the AGIRI.org and the SingularityActionGroup.com and the Novamente AI system, all of it can be found on the web. Do you have a plan to publish anything anytime soon, other than the things that you've been putting up on the web?
Yeah, well, first of all, the Path to Posthumanity book that's on the web, I'm discussing with a publisher, bringing an expanded version of that out in paper form. There's a couple more technical publications in the work. So there's an edited volume called Artificial General Intelligence, which should come out in 2004. That contains research papers by myself and Eliezer Yudkowsky and a number of other researchers who are working in the artificial general intelligence space. And then there's our monster book on Novamente, which is up to about 2,000 pages now, which describes the mathematical and conceptual underpinnings of our design for an artificial general intelligence. And that one we're sort of putting the finishing touches on, and we're certainly looking forward to releasing that book and getting the reaction from the technical AI community, which should be an interesting one.
I really want to thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Change Surfer Radio. Change Surfer Radio is produced at WHUS Stores at the University of Connecticut. If you want to learn more about democratic transhumanism, or you want to share your thoughts about today's show with me, Dr. J, email me at jhughes, that's J-H-U-G-H-E-S, at changesurfer.com. At the Change Surfer website, you can find past and future shows archived in streaming MP3 thanks to the Infos Radio Project. Also at www.changesurfer.com are instructions on how to order copies of our shows and myriad relevant links. So educate, agitate, and organize, and I hope to meet you in a sexy, high-tech, and yet radically democratic future.